The CBC presents
Canadian Snapshots. Canada. It's romance, it's color, it's good humor, and its absorbing interest caught in the lens of the radio camera as it sweeps once more across a nation's vast panorama. Music, too, by one of Canada's native composers. Snapshot number one,
a view of Canada's winter season taken from a feminine angle.
Telegram for you, Mr. Howard. Sign here.
Oh, dear me. A telegram. Sign it, eh? Yeah, well, there you are, my boy.
Thanks, sir.
Yeah. I wonder what... Jesse? Jesse, come here. It's a telegram.
I'm coming. Well, there's nothing wrong, is there, Steve?
Well, it depends how you look at it. Your sister Sarah's coming to pay us a visit on Friday.
Well, for goodness sake. After all my invitations, Sarah's really coming to Yorkville.
It sort of looks that way, Jesse.
What's that about Auntie Sarah coming to see us? Oh, boy!
Yes, Tom, and I want you to be on your very best behavior. And above all, keep your face and hands clean.
Oh, why do I always have to be clean when visitors is here? Ain't visitors the same as other people?
Never you mind. And don't go shouting around the house, scaring everybody out of their wits.
Gee, I'm not shouting, Mom. See, do you think Sarah would like to go coasting on the new slide our gang's built?
Indeed, she wouldn't. She'd as soon be shot off on a rocket.
We got to entertain her, ain't we? Maybe she'd like to go skating in the open-air rink or tobogganing or something. Gee, I got a swell idea. We'll get her a pair of skis and take her out skiing in the country, huh?
Oh, Tom, understand your Aunt Sarah's a lady.
Well, I see lots of ladies out tobogganing and skiing. Pretty snoozy, too, some of them.
Yep, the boy's right, Jesse. Young girls sure look like humdingers in these new winter rigs. Yes, they do. Yeah, I'd like to see Sarah all dressed up, same as them, and going in for winter sports.
Why, Steve Howard, do you mean to insinuate that my sister's one of these modern tomboys? Gallivanting around on skates and skis and goodness knows what? Imagine Sarah in a parka and trousers. I think a law should be passed against women being allowed to wear such things.
Fortunately for thousands of modern women, there are no such laws forbidding them taking part in sports and wearing the colorful and becoming costumes that each of these sports requires.
Especially at this time of the year, Canada affords the opportunity for women to secure strenuous, health-giving outdoor exercise in her great out-of-doors.
Canada invites women both at home and abroad to share in her list of many and varied winter pastimes.
Snapshot number two.
A photograph of old houses.
Two visitors have come to the resort town of St. Andrews, New Brunswick.
Well, Don, so this is St. Andrews where your ancestors came after the American Revolution.
This is it, Doris. Disappointed?
No, not exactly. But I expected it all to be very quaint and sort of ancient-looking.
Well, it is, in spots.
Then I haven't seen them. Our first day here, we spend in a large, modern hotel. We play golf on a fine, up-to-date course. Oh, maybe your ancestors played golf on that course, too.
No, I'm afraid not, Doris.
I suppose those loyalists were too busy building homes for themselves.
Some of them were, but not all of them.
Not all of them what?
Building homes.
Then what in the world were they doing? Chasing Indians?
They didn't need to build homes.
I suppose they just put up at a big hotel, the same as you and I.
They didn't need to build them because they brought their houses with them.
Don is right. The Loyalists who left Castine in Maine after the American Revolution took apart many of their houses and transported them piece by piece in sailing vessels to St. Andrews, New Brunswick.
Many of these old houses, with their weathered shingles and tiny windows made violet with age, are still to be seen in St. Andrews.
It's a fact. Snapshot number 3, music from tonight's Canadian composer.
The Toronto Conservatory of Music has numbered among its students many of Canada's distinguished musicians.
Among these is Kenneth Meek, who now holds the position of director of music in one of Kingston's leading churches.
This young composer has already written several distinguished major works, one of which is the suite Darby and Joan.
The orchestra, under the direction of Samuel Hirshenhorn, will now play two movements of this suite, Cradle Song and Jig, composed by Kenneth Meek. And now, the jig.
Just heard two movements of the orchestral suite Darby and Joan by Kenneth Meek, Canadian composer.
Snapshot number 4.
Two pictures of women engaged in a noble profession.
The middle of the last century, in the living room of the rectory of the Reverend John Smithhurst at Elora, Upper Canada.
Land sakes, Reverend. Look what the postal courier just brought you. A big box from the old country.
This is indeed a surprise, Emily.
Aye.
Go ahead and unfasten the rope.
Yes, Mr. Smithers. Oh, my, but these knots is tied tight.
There's a carving knife on the dresser. Cut them with that.
Thank you, sir. There it is, Reverend. A chest. Will I open it, sir?
Oh, by all means.
Oh, upon my word.
word. It's a communion service.
And a very beautiful one, too, Emily. Silver.
Aye.
Who in the world could have sent it to me? Oh, here's some Latin engraved under one of the pieces.
What does it say, Reverend?
Just a moment. Let me see. Acting for someone else. Ebenezer Hall. Donet Hick. Gives this set of communion silver to the Reverend John Smithhurst. A very dear friend. In grateful recognition of many kindnesses. Anno Domini, 1852. So, she remembered me after all.
Who remembered, sir?
Oh, nobody you could have possibly heard of, Emily. Just a young nurse. We were in love once.
Sir.
But her family was so opposed to the match, we parted, and I came out to Canada as a missionary.
I'm very sorry, sir.
This is so like her. Oh, she has such a beautiful soul, Emily. Beautiful as her name, Florence Nightingale.
Today, in St. John's Anglican Church, Elora, Ontario, you can still see this communion service sent by Florence Nightingale, who 2 years later in the Crimean War was to create the profession of war nursing.
A little romantic incident linking Canada and the lady with a lamp.
From the Crimean War to the present day,
a young recruit of the RCAF has his first view of one of Canada's modern army nurses.
Well, Jerry, what do you think of your first visit to Toronto since joining the Air Force?
Oh, I think it's swell, Bill. Say, who's this good looker coming our way in the nurse's uniform?
Now, how should I know?
Boy, she's
hey,
certainly a
pipe down. What do you mean, pipe down? I said, come on, salute.
What?
Salute, will you?
Good morning.
Hey, what's the idea of shutting me up like that? What do you mean by making me salute that day?
Well, it seems, Jerry, there's a military regulation about saluting your superior officers, isn't there?
Well, sure there is, but what's that got to do with saluting a nurse?
Latin. It was an army nurse you saluted.
Oh.
There's 80 of them here in Toronto, and every one of them's a full-blown lieutenant. And wears lieutenant's pips on her shoulders.
Yes, it's a fact. The nursing sisters in Canada's fighting forces are all commissioned lieutenants of honorary rank.
Tonight, Canadian Snapshots has arranged for you to hear further about these army nurses, and we have here in our studios Miss, or should we say, Lieutenant Neal, who will now be interviewed for you by Reed Forsey of the Talks Department.
As a matter of fact, if the military title is used, what we should say in this case is neither Miss nor Lieutenant, but Matron. Because we are honored to have as our guest the matron of the Toronto Military Hospital, Matron Agnes Neal herself. If we were in the hospital, we'd call her Matron. But in this brief interview, with her permission, we'll call her just Miss Neal. Now, Miss Neal, first let's establish this fact, namely that the nursing sisters of the Royal Canadian Army Medical Corps are all commissioned officers.
That's quite true. The ranks are matron and nursing sister. The commission is an honorary one.
And, of course, the uniforms are all the same?
Yes, they are.
Well, it's a very smart-looking uniform, Miss Neal. And while we're on the subject, will you describe the uniforms of the nursing sisters in the RCAMC? Many of our listeners haven't yet had the opportunity of seeing them. Now, for instance, what about the one you're wearing?
Well, I happen to be wearing what we call our recreation suit. It's for informal wear, off-duty. It's a two-piece suit, navy blue woolen Norfolk jacket and skirt, with a light blue shirt and a navy blue necktie. The coat I was wearing when I came here is called a great coat. It's a navy blue melting cloth with a dull cherry-colored lining. Incidentally, navy blue and dull cherry are the colors of the RCAMC. The hat is navy blue felt, a sailor, worn with the brim up in the back and down in the front.
That was a very clear and concise explanation, Miss Neal. Now, what about your uniforms when on duty or for formal occasions?
They're a lighter blue in color. The blue, I believe, is Saxe blue, and of course different in style. The uniform we wear when on duty is cotton, with a double-breasted tunic buttoning up to the shoulder and worn with a white starched Eton-style collar and cuffs. There are 12 brass buttons on the front of the tunic and more on the shoulder and sleeve. And with this we wear white organdy veils tied around the head and off the face.
Very becoming, too. And is that uniform used for both duty and dress?
Yes, except that for formal wear, instead of cotton, the material is a light, soft woolen, but the style is exactly the same.
And you polish your own brass buttons?
Yes, we certainly do, and our belt buckles. Which reminds me, I forgot to mention our belts. We're very proud of them. They're wide brown leather. The buckles bear the lion and crown. The belt adds to the primness of the uniform.
Miss Neal, how are the nursing sisters of the RCAMC recruited? What are the requirements?
I'll answer the last part of that question first. Briefly, the requirements are that a girl must be a registered nurse, registered in the province in which she is practicing, and a member of the Registered Nurses Association. Then she must be in Class A physical condition.
So you're not Red Cross nurses, are you?
No, we are not. Some are enrolled in the Red Cross. Now, that brings us to the recruiting of nursing sisters. In Toronto, those who were recruited were first individually interviewed. Then they went up for their medical board examination. After this, their papers were made out. Then there was a thorough X-ray examination. And lastly, when they had passed all requirements, they signed their papers.
And do they swear the oath of allegiance?
Yes. Each nursing sister is sworn to serve her king and country for the duration of the war.
And so she becomes a nursing sister of the Royal Canadian Army Medical Corps, with the rank of nursing sister. Of course, she has a lot to learn then about military procedure and ethics, hasn't she?
Yes, indeed. The nursing sisters attend lectures by the officers in the unit. Among many other things, they have to learn the badges of rank of the arms of the service. That in itself requires a lot of study, to say nothing of the many other details.
I guess it would, Miss Neal. Now, what about their work? How many hours a day is each nursing sister on duty?
8 hours.
And there are nursing sisters in military hospitals right across Canada, are there not?
Yes, all governed by the same regulations.
And all ready to go anywhere on very short notice?
Yes, of course. They're in the RCAMC and ready to serve their king and country.
And our good wishes go with them, wherever they go, Miss Neal, and with you, too. Please accept our sincere thanks for being our guest this evening.
Snapshot number 5.
Now, another composition of Kenneth Meek. One of his songs, a setting of the famous 17th century lyric, "There is a Lady Sweet and Kind," to be sung for you by William Morton, accompanied by the orchestra under Samuel Hirsenhorn.
There is a lady sweet and kind, was never face so pleased my mind. I did but see her passing by, and yet I love her, and yet I love her till I die. Her gestures, motions, and her smile, her wit, her voice, my heart beguile my heart, I know not why. And yet I love her, and yet I love her till I die. And doth range her country, so my love doth change, but change the earth, or change the sky. Yet will I love her, yet will I love her.
That was William Morton singing There Is a Lady Sweet and Kind, the second of two compositions representing the work of Kenneth Meek, Canadian composer.
Snapshot number 6, one of Canada's firsts, where the first lollipops in Canada were made.
The first chocolate factory in the Dominion was built at Dartmouth, Nova Scotia.
Tonight, the Special Events Department has arranged for you to hear all about it.
So now, come with us east to Dartmouth, Nova Scotia.
This is Dartmouth speaking to you. We're out here now on the site of the first chocolate factory in the Dominion of Canada. This factory shut down some years ago, and all that remains now is the great smokestack towering stark and gaunt into the cold winter sky. I have with me here tonight a man who is equipped to tell you more about this factory than possibly any other man around here. It's Mr. A.C. Pettipaw. His father worked for the Mott factory for quite a number of years. Just how long did he work for the Mott, Mr. Pettipaw?
My father worked for the Mott factory for over half a century, 50 years.
That certainly is a long time to remain in the employ of any one firm.
And he's still living. He's 84 years of age, and he's very active.
Well, that's really quite something. You were telling me before that, well, as a boy, while your father was working for the Mott, this was more or less a playground for you. Well, now, I certainly envy any man who had a chocolate factory for a playground.
Well, it was a great playground for me, I must say. 35 years ago, I spent all my boyhood days here, and I spent a good bit more than my boyhood days. I spent all the time I could. I hauled wood from this place here. I took the odd bit of broken chocolate.
No doubt. I imagine any fellow would that works around a chocolate factory.
And I had a wonderful time. The scene, of course, tonight is quite different from what it was then, when we had a splendid factory producing its finished products for all parts of the world.
Well, now, that the process of making that, I mean, as any kid would think of chocolate bars, but the chocolate industry goes so much further than that. Just how did they get about making the chocolate in the first place?
Well, in the first place, of course, they imported the bean, the queso bean, they called it, from Mexico, from Java, and all in the West Indies. And they came here, and then they roasted those beans. And that's a very delicate operation. I well remember that. And as soon as the beans were roasted, they had to be quickly cooled and then shelled.
That would, I suppose, govern the taste of the finished product quite a bit.
Very much so. It all depended upon that and the color and the taste in the connection with the roasting of the beans. And then, of course, if they intended to make the famous cocoa drink, why, they had to take the butter out of the beans, and that was done by hydraulic presses. And then that became a hard substance, a hardened cake. And that all broke up and was the regular chocolate. And, of course, they were making the regular chocolate. They kept the cocoa butter. They didn't take the cocoa butter from that.
That was for eating chocolate.
That was for eating chocolate.
But the cocoa then was more or less a byproduct of it, wasn't it?
Sort of a byproduct, but still it was one that it entered into all markets of the world. It was a wonderful, they had a wonderful market for that.
Well, it does seem rather odd that the famous Mott's breakfast cocoa should have been actually a byproduct of the chocolate industry.
Well, it was perhaps not a, insofar as compensation was concerned, it was one of the big parts of the industry. Of course, the chocolate making was a very important branch, perhaps a major branch of it.
Yes, I imagine so. Well, now, how about chocolate bars? Did they use that?
Quick.
Well, I think our time is up now. We'll return you to Toronto.
Perhaps you, too, know of a Canadian oddity, something decidedly unusual or strange in the Canadian scene, something that would make a good subject for the actuality portion of Canadian Snapshots.
If you do, write into the Special Events Department of the CBC, giving full particulars of your Canadian oddity. The Special Events Department will send a crisp $10 bill to anyone whose suggestion is used. Bear in mind, it must be something along the believe-it-or-not line, and it must be capable of being described in an actuality broadcast.
To give you an idea of what is wanted, here are a few that have been used. A farm in the city of Montreal, the smallest business block in Canada, the frost-proof garden at Winnipeg, and the first candy factory in Canada described in tonight's broadcast.
In case of two or more similar suggestions being sent in on the same subject, the prize-winning letter will be judged to be the first received. Address your letters to the CBC Special Events Department, 341 Church Street, Toronto. A holiday in mind this year which you would like to spend somewhere in Canada?
I thought of going to the Maritime Provinces and spending my summer in one of those nice quiet places beside the sea.
I was planning a hunting and fishing trip to northern Ontario, and from what I'm told, nothing but wild horses is going to stop me.
And nothing is going to stop me either. All my life I've wanted to take a vacation in the Rockies, and this year I'm taking it.
From the Atlantic to the Pacific, Canada expects this year the greatest volume of tourist trade in her whole history.
Canadian Snapshots has been produced in Toronto. The orchestra, featuring music by a Canadian composer, was directed by Samuel Hersenhorn. Another volume of Canadian Snapshots will be heard next week at the same time. Radio Canada, this is the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.